Okay. Our final paper this morning is by Dave Donovan, who is a PhD researcher in Department of Applied Social Studies as well. Research is a narrative study of community workers' professions and lives and works in Galway. The title of his paper is Praxis Bold as Love, Professing Community Work. Thanks.
I sent up one set of slides and then I decided to change it, so I kind of changed the title from practice to practice, because you know, practice is very much part of the practice. So I'm looking at the whole practice in general rather than just a bit of it. So I'm going to start by asking people, how many people know in what direction they're facing right now without looking at their phones? Are you facing north, south, east, or west?
West.
Yeah. Okay, so three people in the room of you. And this is something I thought about because I was at a workshop here, again, at the World Community Development Conference during the summer, and these young people had developed this whole workshops, series of workshops with Syrian refugees who were probably in the Midlands, who live in the town, and it was all centered around the mobile phone. And with the mobile phone, you know, you have a GPS location, you know, so you kind of know where you are. But you know where you are here, but you know, you don't know which way you're facing, or you don't know which, where to turn. And that got me thinking about community, community work and this, about, you know, what is it that community work profess? You know, what is their way of seeing and being in the world? And how is that manifest? So this got me then to look at the, you know, wonderful quotation from John Lennon, the well-known sociologist, who sort of says, you know, how can you go forward if you don't know which way you're facing? Or this is rumored to be the shortest ever commencement address given to at a college in New York when Daniel Berrigan, the Jesuit anti-war activist, stood up and said, "Know where you stand and stand there," and then left. And, the students were probably delighted that the people invited them might necessarily have been. So this is kind of what my research is about. Was, and particularly because it kind of arrived at a point in my life where I had originally studied community work here in the Midlands in 1993. And then I left, and I always said I ran away from the circus. I joined Moffins and got involved in street art and community art and stuff like that. And then when the recession happened, I was made redundant, so I was no longer that. But you know, I'd spent 20 years working in that, and had come to a point where I was finally okay with calling myself an artist. You know, I never called myself an artist. And then eventually, people said, "No, but you are." You then I said, "Okay, well, I'm an artist." And then 2 months later, I was made redundant. So that identity was jettisoned. So I came back to Louth and got into community work. So I was kind of thinking, what do community workers talk about? What do they say? Where do they see themselves? And this is what I set out to do. So community work I started thinking about and using community work and community development interchangeably. The way, which is kind of like the way it's kind of written about. But the more I got into it, I think there's a fundamental difference between community work and community development. And development is something that kind of happens. It's assumed, we develop. So we start off as children, we grow into adults, and we develop into old age. So it's kind of a process that's unfolding. Whereas community work is actually about it's about work. And it's about how you make things happen, or how things can be happen, or how you can facilitate things to happen, which is different than development. So community work then it's a process it's a task of bringing about social change. And the workers, I would say, that's not enough. It has to be structural change, and structural change in the direction of social justice. And then it's a process of how this happens, and this is very much, as Jamie sort of stole my best slides. The community. These values are essential to community work. Take away any one of these, and you're not doing community work. Take away, community empowerment, and you're not doing community work. So these values are central to how community work happens. And community work, has the history of community work in Ireland is interesting. It's been there for like years and years and years, and way back into the 18th century, it kind of started. Harvey would argue that community development ended in Ireland in 2015 with the introduction of competitive tendering. Now you have the introduction of this whole kind of for-profit possibility of coming into whereby community work was always done as without the profit motive. Intervening. So But Ireland has its history of community work, start beginning with the Kilkenny conferences in the 1970s and the 1980s, in which it was, you know, poverty was rediscovered in Ireland. People began to sort of talk about it, and they began to talk about it very, very differently to how it had been before. Poverty was kind of no longer seen as being the individual's responsibility. They were poor because of something that you lacked. They were beginning to develop a more kind of structural analysis of poverty. Poverty was actually built into the structure, and you were poor because of where you were positioned within that structure. And community work began to happen on that basis. It was aimed at changing the structure, at changing the structures that placed people in those positions. And in Ireland, it was the leading edge of community development in Europe. And somehow, I think this was when it started. It started with a lot of development workers who were coming back from having worked overseas and coming back with a whole different way of looking at the work, and then coming to apply that field. The recent history of community work, it comes on. But as Ireland got, there was kind of a recession in the 80s, and began to come out of recession in the 90s, and the state embraced this very kind of neoliberal sort of model of doing it, and you had ministers like MacDougall saying inequality is good for society. Inequality is what drives the economy. If you don't have any inequality, then there's something wrong with the society. It's what needed. And the same MacDougall then as well sort of began to look at the community and voluntary sector and sort of say, well, you know, these people are kind of upsetting that because they're actually challenging that, that they're coming at it from a different angle and saying that's wrong. And with the development of social partnership, whereby in the 1980s they brought the employers and the farmers and the unions and the state together to sort of negotiate a plan to bring the state out of the recession. And this social partnership, was developed, and finally sort of the community and voluntary sector was invited into that as a way of bringing this other voice in. And this was McDowell's sort of response to that. McDowell was a member of the Progressive Democrats, which was a very, very small party at the time. I think they had 5 TDs, but they had the balance of power, so they were in a very strong position. So he was able to sort of say that, you know, that what we've actually done is we've invited dissent in here, and this is bad because it's making us look bad, and it's challenging our view of the world. And so and social partnership, though, you know, while it was a good thing, it had a very sort of, it was very, very kind of consensualist and sort of tried to sort of paper over all the cracks, and was very kind of anti-intellectual, and dissent wasn't allowed. You weren't allowed to sort of, when the Celtic Tiger was in there, you weren't allowed to speak up against it because it looked bad and embarrassed us in Europe and places like that. And so it wasn't, it wasn't very conducive to community work. And this neoliberal ideology is really interesting because, you know, it starts out as a kind of an economic model, but it actually infects everything. It's like a virus. It just sort of gets inside. I imagine it being like pollutants in the air or plastics in the ocean. You know, they come in and they change. They change our makeup. They change how we see ourselves. They change our values. Quite subtly, without us even noticing it. So this was the kind of context that was happening at the time. I sort of came to do this research, and I always look at this word "difficultator" comes from the work of Augusto Boal, who developed this model of the theatre of the oppressed, which is whereby you get, you know, people come and they make theatre out of their lives. And they presented to an audience. And at any time, a member of the audience, they would stand up and say, no, I want to change that. And they would come in and replace people in it. And that way, then, you can begin to sort of work out, you know, possible solutions or potential solutions to what's happening. And Boal sees this as, you know, theatre as a rehearsal for revolution. And what is happening in that is that people are coming in and they're actually, you know, discovering that it is possible to change things by making an intervention and to change things. So change becomes possible, and through the stepping into the roles, they actually begin to embody change, to feel what it's like in their bodies to sort of change. So community work is a bit like that. It's the role of difficultator. It's questioning all these given, taken for giving assumptions and saying, well, what about this and what about this, and proposing different solutions. So this was my research curiosity, was, you know, what is it that community workers profess? Where do they place themselves in the world? How do they see and how do they live in the world as community workers? And I chose to do this my narrative inquiry because, as Brunner says in your stories, our consciousnesses, we are conscious, it's a narrative consciousness, we interpret the world and we make stories out of it to make sense of the world. And our language, which is primarily talking about English, is structured for storytelling. And we learn to do it very, very, very young. You know, like young children, you know, have to grasp the basis of storytelling almost as soon as they begin to talk. And storytelling is an essential part of community work. You know, that Ledwith talks about personal difficulties becoming, you know, common concerns leading to collective action for collective action. So it starts off, as Tommy was talking about, it starts off with one man's story, one man coming into the project with a story, and then this triggers off this other people coming together and developing a collective story, and then this story leads them into action and takes them somewhere. And narrative inquiry takes this as well and says that, narrative is a phenomenon, but it's also a method of research. So you can actually, you know, use stories as a way of researching the world. So I put out a call, and six community workers replied, and these are their pseudonyms. And in the text and the writing of this, each one of them always appears in a different font because they are, you know, they have privileged me with giving me their stories, and then I have to sort of take them out. But their voices, it's important that their voice is always there, that they are present in the research, and they actually have names. And all these names that were pseudonyms that they chose themselves, and actually gave very, very valid reasons for it, except for two people who didn't. And I chose their pseudonyms, and then I wrote to them and said, I've chosen the pseudonym because of this, are you okay if you use it? And they gave me permission to use their pseudonym. So this keeps them anchored in the text, always present as I'm writing. And I analysed it, the text with a kind of, I think, drawing on two methods, the voice-centered relation method, which was developed by Carol Gilling, and looking at the stories of women. And that's the notion that we grow up in cultures, and this is inside us, we can never escape it. And there's all these multiple voices in the cultures, and these are in our heads. And by actually listening and constantly reading people's narratives, we can actually hear these other voices that they come out. And this is often done through picking out sections of it and using personal pronouns that the people use as a way of getting into these voices. And like Benson writes that pronouns are locative, so therefore the different pronouns that the people use when they're talking locate them in different positions and different places within the culture. So for example, when they're talking about you, or they're talking about somebody else, or they're talking about themselves in the second person as a way of distancing themselves from what they're talking about, or as a way maybe of admonishing themselves for something that some part of practice that they disagree with. And when they're talking about we, are they talking about the collective fear, or are they talking about myself and then in the story, or when they're talking about us, you know, what does that mean? So the pronouns become quite and then from the pronouns I created all these voices that I named. So when they're talking about sort of having these voices, like these voices of spirituality, relationship, connection, and these things in the stories. And that was a way of going, you know, virtually down and down and down into some of these stories and really immersing yourself into it. And then I used thematic analysis as a way of looking across the stories. So I imagine if I laid out all the stories on the ground, you would see these little flags or all these different voices coming. So by picking up this flag here, I can see what this person is talking about. And on the bottom of the flag are all these words that come with it. And then I pick up the flag here, it's in that same colour, and they have all these words here. So you can actually see how their words kind of met and merged together, and what kind of themes were common about it. And then working on that, then I was able to construct what exactly it is that their profession means. So profession, it involves community workers making really, really strong commitments to three things. The social justice, which have taken kind of an under plume for the values of community work, they are really essential to them. They're really, you know, when they're talking, reading their story, but they're actually core part of their being. They can't separate themselves from them. Community, and it's not community in the sense of this community or that community or the community credit. It's community in a much, much more holistic sort of a sense, and it's something that's really, really elusive, and it's never in the same place when we look for it. And it's never, it's always a journey, it's always a point of, you know, trying to get somewhere. It's never actually a point of arrival. And it's not always a comfortable place to be in. It can be quite uncomfortable to sort of sit in that space and try to realise it. And they also make this massive commitment to practice in a very, very particular sort of a way. And I'll just give you some examples of what they say about their practice. In talking about social justice, the one thing that kind of underlies all that is that there's a lot of talk about love. And love is a complete taboo word in community work and community development and development and whole sorts of talk. Most of the social professions, in a way, to talk about love is to almost be made a kind of a pariah. It's a word we're really afraid of. But it's central. And I remember this sentence. We were sort of sitting in this woman's, it was a parapet. So we were sitting in this room, and it was a really dark, dingy day like today. And we were talking away, and as we were talking away, it got darker and darker. Suddenly I just asked this question, what's the space for love in your practice? Because, you know, writers like Paulo Freire and others who are quite influential in community work uses the word love all the time. And she just jumped up and said, you know, working with people is about, and love appears there 8 times in that one little sentence, but her whole being just kind of lit up when you began to speak about this. But it's something that we're not supposed to talk about. Yet it's essential for the values of the community. Yet, you know, without love, you don't have the values of community work. And the values then are, you know, are the type of things that hold them. Like James, who works in the community that has just been redeveloped, and the part of their struggle was in the redevelopment. So, okay, yes, we can have physical regeneration. That's great. We need that. But we need social regeneration. We need economic regeneration. We need cultural regeneration. And we need a community-centred place where community can come and be talked about and celebrated and really be part of where we are. And so there was a new manager appointed. And here you can see this a complete different, you know, this kind of, you know, two different words clashing. For James, sort of says, you know, this is a community centre. It's not the fucking convention centre. That's, you know, and in saying it, he's acknowledging the struggle that the community had, that community is so central, and that in that the values of community work that are part of that struggle are central to that and still maintained and built on. So community then isn't nobody ever described it as a sort of a physical place. They describe it always in terms of a relations space. Community is a set of relations. Community is a set of relations based on those particular values. And Cathal O'Hagan talks about this notion of community spirit, you know, this energy that emerges when you bring people together to do something, that they can achieve something that like, you know, like the man Tommy was talking about, that individually they could never have gone to Valencia, but when they come together, by making this happy mistake, they end up going on a trip to Valencia. So that's kind of like what, you know, what kind of stuff that community spirit can talk about. And Cathal O'Hagan was quite inspired by, he was asked once, you know, who's your hero in community work, and he said Jesus Christ, and he said, well, you know, whether he was the Son of God doesn't matter to me. What's important was that he didn't take the Harvard Business School MBAs. He went to the gobshites, and he said, you know, this is, you know, you're the people that need to work. And I thought that was a wonderful metaphor for, you know, to speak about community workers, gobshite, you know, community worker, the person who makes mistakes, who falls over, who denies stuff, but actually still gets, you know, is there and can, you know, can be relied on, and still is kind of nurturing the community spirit. And when it comes to practice, there's this whole commitment that they made, because the people I was interviewing were quite senior in the field, so they would be hosting students on workplace, but they'd be teaching here in the Department of Applied Social Studies. So they have this whole thing about, you know, that there is this practice and it is something that is particular and needs to be handed on in a way so that people coming into it understand what they're getting into and what this practice is and why they're there and where they're standing and what direction they're facing. And then they also talk about this notion of vulnerability, that you have to be able to expose yourself and to sort of let the world in. And you can see that in Tommy's story, how the world of the men has impacted on his life, has opened his life up and allowed him to into that, and also and change the project. Parker Palmer talks about community as this place where the person you least want to meet is always going to be there and you're always going to have to deal with. And when they decide to leave or die or whatever, somebody equally, you know, problematic is going to appear and they're always going to be there. And he speaks about the work that has your heart broken, you know, that it's kind of work of the broken hearted. And not in the sense of your heart is being broken apart, whereby you can't actually, you know, it's all your time you spend trying to put it back together, but your heart is broken open. And in your heart being broken open, it allows you to see the other, and allows the other to come into your life in a way that alters your life as much as theirs. This notion of hospitality and welcome, and Miroslav Wolf writing about it in the context of the war in Yugoslavia, talks about this notion of embrace. It's a practice of embrace. And embrace involves this kind of fourfold movement of opening yourself up and then inviting the other in, and then closing, not in a way to crush the other, but to hold them, and then releasing them again. But in that moment of opening yourself up, you're completely vulnerable. You don't know how the other is going to react. The only thing you ask of the other is that they are present in all their agency as well, but you're open up to whatever they bring to that and to work from there. So this is back to the notion of community work as different things. And I had a slide here of a map of the stars. And if you look up, you can see the stars and you know where you are. But neoliberalism is like light pollution. You look at the night sky and you can't see a thing because it's just blocked out. So as a community worker, what you're trying to do is develop this kind of night vision so that you can see through this. And you can see the stars, and you know where you are, you know where you stand, and you stand there. And as back to John Lennon, you know the direction you have to go in. And again, drawing on the work of the murdered Salvadoran Jesuits, you know, Ignacio Alcuri has this wonderful thing of talking about, you know, that realizing and shouldering and bearing the weight of the world is you know, what you are. When you stand in the world, breaks your heart and you invite it in. But if you don't look where you stand, that you won't be able to carry it. You kind of fall apart. So thank you very much for listening.